We often talk about not repeating history when it comes to the genocide carried out during World War II or the inequities of Jim Crow laws. But one part of our country's history that often seems lost are the slew of eugenics laws that made forced sterilization legal during much of the 20th century.
By the 1970s, at least 60,000 people in the U.S. had been sterilized, according to Jacqueline Wernemont, assistant professor of English at ASU.
In 1909, California legislatures passed a law that authorized medical superintendents to sterilize anyone that they thought was unfit for reproduction. And essentially, the notion was that you were building a better, quote unquote, breeding pool, right? So eugenics is this idea that by eliminating the breeding opportunities of certain people, you could therefore produce a better human race. And then it got pretty quickly adopted in the U.S. In the early part of the 20th century as a way of improving essentially the people of the nation.
Wernemont is now working with colleagues at the University of Michigan to bring that forgotten history to light. And the show's Lauren Gilger spoke with Wernemont more about this, and she joins us now. Good morning, Lauren.
Morning, Steve.
So 60,000 people is a lot of people. How is it possible we don't know more about this?
I had the same question, and Wernemont told me that 60,000 is probably actually an underestimate. So this is the trouble with healthcare privacy laws. She says they've had a hard time getting these records and that they aren't able to make them fully public. They have to redact patient names and any identifying information, things like that. And she says it's difficult to tell a story without a person in it. So they're creating what's called the Eugenics Rubicon, a sort of digital history of eugenics in America that Wernemont hopes will allow people to experience this dark part of our history. So they used archival documents, visualizations. They even created sonifications of these records. So I want to play you one of those. Here's a little bit of one of those sonifications and how she describes their multi-pronged approach to sharing these records. And in this sonification, each note represents one person who was recommended for sterilization.
So one of the things we do in reparative justice work is we want the people who have been harmed to tell their own story in their own words. This is incredibly difficult to do in this particular case because a great many of them are dead. And so what we have done is used protest letters. People often protested their sterilization orders, other kinds of documentation where we have their words written down. We also have a kind of photographic essay tied with some of the categories under which people were recommended for sterilization. So, you know, we have these really very troubling cases where you get something like a 12-year-old girl who had been sexually assaulted by her father, and that's the reason why she's being sterilized is because she's considered now unfit.
So, Lauren, what was the motivation behind laws like these? Why was this allowed to happen?
Well, Wernemont says its history was rooted in the sterilization of animals, actually, but the practice soon turned into something else.
So the idea was that there were a set of people who had what were considered at the time to be serious mental illnesses or other kinds of deficiencies that rendered them less fit for reproduction. So people who had had tuberculosis, people who were described as schizophrenic, people who were considered to be unproductive citizens also often fell under these medical categories. The field of psychology and psychiatry was really sort of blossoming at this moment. And so what they did was they said, for those who have been committed to mental hospitals or other kinds of institutions for the mentally ill, that those people, we should not permit them to reproduce. And so that's why they began these sterilization practices.
Were certain groups targeted in this?
Yes. Yeah. So we have some pretty good data coming out of this project by other collaborators suggesting that people who appear to be Latino-Latina were disproportionately sterilized. It also looks like there are certain kinds of age or wealth distributions that show up. And, you know, in the beginning, sterilization of men was more common because it was an easier surgery. Mm. You had a lot of petty criminals who were being institutionalized. But then you have, you know, as time goes along, you have an increase in the sterilization of women. And a lot of this is tied to certain kinds of racial ideologies that say, right, Black and brown people are reproducing at rates that are untenable. These people can't take care of themselves. They were often institutionalized. And then sterilization was one of their only ways out of the institution.
When did this practice finally end?
So the law was repealed finally in 1979. In our particular data set, we have a pretty significant drop-off in the number of sterilizations in the late 50s. Mm-hmm. So there's a kind of bell curve, right? In some ways, it ramps up starting in 1909 and then tapers off quite quickly in the 1950s, 60s, in part because there were significant protests, particularly by women of color, marches, et cetera. There are these amazing images of women marching in LA, you know, talking about the right to keep their bodies whole, essentially.
Yeah. So what is your goal with this? You want people to experience this. You obviously want this to come back into the cultural conversation.
Mm-hmm.
What do you want people to know and to learn?
Well, I mean, I want people to know, right, simply that the history exists. Very often people, when they think about eugenics, they tend to think about in other places, right? Specifically Germany, right? And I think it's important that we recognize that both our state and our university systems were wrapped up in this practice here in the United States. I want people to think about what this means for impacted communities. 20,000 people sterilized is a very large number of people who were never born. And given what we know from the records about why people were institutionalized, like I said, for things like petty crimes or, you know, young women who were considered overdeveloped at their age, right? Things that aren't actually about heritable disease. I think we need to think hard about what the U.S. would have looked like if this had not happened. And then I think the third thing is I want people to be alive to the fact that it could happen again. If people think this thing could have never happened here, and yet it did, 60,000 people at least, I think that means that it's possible that things could happen again.
And who do you want to see this in particular?
You know, for those who think that we live in a post-racial society, 1979 was not that long ago. And that's when this law was repealed in California. And I want people to know that this history is alive and well with us. It's not long past by any stretch of the imagination.
That's Jacqueline Wernemont, an English professor at ASU who's working to build the Eugenics Rubicon to bring light to the history of legal sterilization in the U.S.
The show's Lauren Gilger. Lauren, thank you.
Thank you.